So we're into the second little talk in my current series, which I've now given a name to. I've called it Living True. And so we've got four sessions from Romans 12, like I said last week. This week our title is Grace. Okay, and so we'll be looking at that this morning. One of the things which has always amused Helen and me is the height difference between us. Well, there's various things that have kind of amused us over the time. One was that when we were married and we were on the steps of the church at the front, Helen was up a step for the photos, her dress kind of hiding that fact when I was standing next to her, so there was that. One day, I can't remember if it was before or after we were married, we thought we'd measure ourselves and find out in what way we were taller and how much by and so on. So we discovered that there is 14 inches between us in height, and then we discovered that 11 of those are in the leg and 3 of them are in the body. The other thing which was slightly amusing is that we were one of 3 flats on our small block that we used to live in when we were first married. And there was another couple whose wedding we went to, out of these other 2 flats, he was 6'7". She was 4'11". So we came back saying they make us look normal. We measure ourselves in these kinds of ways, and it's quite amusing, really. But I wonder, kind of, how do you measure yourself as a person? Because people do, don't they? People like to measure themselves. And so I wrote down just so you could probably think of others, but people tend to measure themselves in these kinds of ways. By their looks, how good-looking they are. By their fashion, what clothes they wear. By their wealth, how much they have. By what car they drive. By what job they have. By what age they are. And that can work both ways. By the position or positions that they hold. By their education. And what qualifications they've got. By their achievements. What they have managed to do. We've had the election this week. People measure themselves by what political views they hold. And people also measure themselves by their philosophy of life. Maybe their faith, if they've got one. So, how do you measure yourself? How do you do that? I think probably there's a couple of questions which you can ask yourself, which kind of gives you some clue. The first is, who do you look at and say they are successful? Who are the people that you look at and call successful? The other one might be this, is who do you look at and want to be like? Because that can happen too, can't it? Doesn't matter whether it's your friends, whether it's somebody, you know, in the public eye. But certainly maybe we can be pushed towards wanting to, or feeling that we need to measure up to a parent, particularly if that parent's the kind of person that said, by your age I was doing this. Or, when you do what I've done, then you'll be able to do this, which I've also done. Does that sound familiar at all? Yeah, but then there's the media as well, isn't there? That are always presenting these pictures of successful people, if you like. Important people, maybe. And the influence is always, or the point is always, be like them, isn't it? Be like them. You know, be like Kim Kardashian, whose name to some of you may just go straight over your heads, but to the young of today is this symbol of beauty and wealth and you know, all these, and being in the public eye. Being famous for nothing, really, to be honest. So what about God? How does God measure us? Does God measure us? Does he hold up some kind of tape measure and say, you're this good or you're that good or something? How do we measure up in his eyes? And today, when we're talking about grace, what has grace got to do with all of that? So that's what I'm going to be talking about. What do we mean then by grace? Oh, that was what I was supposed to put up during my introduction. Well, there you go. What do we mean by grace? You get these words in verse 6, I think it is, of the passage, verse 6. It starts off, in his grace. In his grace. When we talk about grace, sometimes we think about this idea, the ballet dancer. This is not my ballet pose, by the way. But I'll let you imagine. I don't need to do it. You can see it. There's something beautiful. There's something delightful about the ballet dancer. It is quite technical. But, too, there's something very natural that provides that grace, isn't there? That sense of beauty. Something which puts, you know, if she was just going around like this, you wouldn't think that was particularly graceful. There's nothing gracious about that, is there? There's something delightful about the kind of dancing that they do. Grace, also, we talk about doing favours for people. A little bit of grace, you know. Something which they've not earned, but it's a favour to them. And God's grace is about his favour towards us. Things that he doesn't have to do, things that he doesn't have to give, but he wants to and he does. And they're things of great beauty and things that are of great delight, actually, for us as well. Last week we talked about mercy and God's mercy. Mercy is helping those who can't help themselves. People who are in a position where they cannot help themselves need mercy. So maybe you help somebody out of that situation. But grace is almost the next step, if you like. Grace is doing more than necessary. Grace is blessing beyond, you know, just for the sake of blessing, really. And in this passage today, Paul says, in his grace, God has given us different gifts for doing different things well. So these gifts, these things Paul calls gifts, are the ability to do particular things. Or it might be, perhaps you might put it as God's call on you to do particular things, because he's made you able to do them. And Paul lists quite a few things here. You look at verse 6 and 7 and 8. He talks about prophesying. He talks about serving. He talks about teaching. He talks about encouraging. He talks about giving. He talks about leading. And he talks about showing kindness. There's a great variety of gifts that God gives to us as his followers, as believers. A great variety of gifts. Paul's not listing every single one under the sun. He could go on for ages and ages. There's far more than this that God gives us in his grace. But these are the things that he wanted to just draw out as examples, really. And like I say, these are things which God gives in his grace. They are gifts. They're gifts. They're not earned. And that means that these gifts are not about the person who receives them. They're not about that. They're about God. They're not a reward. It's not God saying, well, you're good enough, so therefore I will give you this gift. Instead, God just says, here you go, here's something. Almost blindly, you could say. They come to us, these gifts come to us out of God's grace. They come out of his love. You know, why am I a pastor? What makes me a minister? Why do I do this? Is it because I'm better than you lot? Is that true? No, of course it's not. I'm not better than you. But God might have decided, and you can argue about this later, whether or not he's actually that he's gifted me to be a pastor. And he's called me to be a pastor, and therefore that is what I do. Because that's what he's called and gifted me to do. Doesn't mean I'm better than anybody else. Just means that that is what God has given me to do. And Paul would say the same thing. He was an apostle. You know, one of the great leaders in the church. Going around, excuse me, itchy leg. Going around the Middle East, going around the Mediterranean basin, planting churches. Why? Because he was such a brilliant guy and so fantastic. And, you know, I'm sure he did have a great faith. I really do. But in the end, Paul says, in verse 3, because of the privilege and authority God has given me. That's why he does what he does. That's why he's writing this letter to the people in Rome. Because of, in a simple form, the grace given me. That's what he writes. Because of the grace given me. He sees his task here. He says, because of the grace given me, I give each of to you this warning. He goes on to give some instructions, doesn't he? But what I find interesting is he says, if you can see verse 1 that we looked at last week, where it says, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies, etc., etc. That I plead with you, that's the same word as the word for encourage that he mentions later on as one of the gifts that God gives. So he understands his own ministry, what he does, as being a gift from God, a calling from God. It doesn't come from him. He's not saying, I'm so great so I can tell you what to do. That's not it. He's saying, I'm doing what God has told me to do. And what God has told me to do is to give you this instruction, to teach you these things about Christ, and to encourage you in this way. So this is what I'm going to do. So I quite like, actually, the way that they've translated verse 3, where they talk about privilege and authority. Because that is what makes Paul an apostle. It's his privilege, his authority that God has given him. This business of God's grace is really fundamental to the Christian faith. In fact, it's what makes it distinctive, I'd say, amongst all the other religions of the world. In the world at large, we're used to things like getting what you pay for. You walk into the shop, there's something you want to buy, it's got a price on it, you need to hand that over. Or, if you're really lucky, you go to the market and you can bargain over it. But we're used to getting what we pay for. We have some understanding of grace. We're used to people doing favours for each other. I'll do a favour for you. I don't mind doing that. But I can tell you why I'll do a favour for you. It's because I know you. I already know you. So I'll do a favour for you. Because I know that there's some chance at some point you might do a favour for me as well when I need it. So that'd be good, wouldn't it? That's nice. That's doing favours for people that you know. People you already have that relationship with. Friends, families. Occasionally, you do favours for people you don't tend to know very well. But when you do, they always say, I'll do something for you. There's always that sense in which doing a favour for somebody puts them in a position where they have to do something for you. Do you answer me? And that is the way the world works. And a lot of that creeps into religion as well. What do? You go up to your temple, or whatever it is, and you place an offering. Why do you do that? Because you want something from God. There's a price on it. There might not be a fixed price. It might be that the more you can give, the better chance there is of getting what you want. That might be your theory. It might be that, again, there's this favour thing. I'll go and do something for God. I'll go abroad on mission. I'll go and, you know, go door knocking. And God will reward me for doing that. He'll do a favour for me for doing that. That would be a religious point of view. It's not a Christian one, but it is one. But with Christianity, what we do is we start with Jesus. We say before anything else, before we know God, before we have any relationship with God, what God does is an enormous favour for us. He sends Jesus. He deals with all the sin. He deals with all of that on the cross. And that's just the start of things. Because after he's done that, he also starts giving out these gifts, Paul says. Ephesians 2 says this. Once you were dead because of your disobedience and your many sins, God saved you by his grace when you believed. And you can't take credit for this. It's a gift from God. Salvation is not a reward for the good things we've done. So none of us can boast about it. Grace means there's nothing to boast in. There's nothing to boast about. Not about me and what I've done. You know, dead bodies, once you were dead because of your disobedience and your many sins, dead bodies can't do anything to help themselves, can they? But in his grace, God comes into the world in the person of Jesus. Jesus takes on himself this disobedience, these many sins, he takes that on himself. That all dies with Jesus. Jesus is raised to new life. And then God says, and you can be too if you trust in Jesus. And so we are. We are saved by our faith in Jesus, in what he's already done for us out of grace. To put it another way, I wrote this down. In the cross, God has done infinitely more for us than we could ever do for him. Well, that's undermining religion. And God gives us infinitely more than we could ever give back. Well, that undoes religion as well, doesn't it? That's what makes Christianity different. So there's nothing for us to boast about. It's all a gift. It's all something beautiful and delightful that God has done for us. So what does this mean then when we go back to this passage we were looking at in Romans? Have a look in verse 3. Paul talks about measuring yourselves. Grace is to influence how we measure ourselves. Grace is to influence how we live. This series I've called Living True, How to Build a Life in Line with God's Mercy. I could have called it How to Build a Life in Line with God's Grace. That would have been equally true. How do we build a life in line with God's grace? This is what we need to look at. Paul says, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us. Measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us. Grace is what we believe. We believe in grace. So we measure ourselves by the message of grace, of what God has done for us in Jesus. The funny thing here, if you notice, is that even that believing is something that God has given us. Even that doesn't come from ourselves, so we can't claim, hey, I'm really good at believing, so, you know, that's why God has given me. No, he hasn't. But I know too that having read this verse other times, previous times, in other versions of the Bible, translations of the Bible, sometimes you can read the words in that verse and come away with the wrong impression. That what these words do not mean is measuring how big your own faith is compared to other people's, and of course according to your own definition of what faith is. That's not what Paul says. So I don't look at my faith and then look at Rebecca's and go, well, you know, I spend far more time looking, opening my Bible and studying in my office than Rebecca does, so I'm a much better Christian than she is. That's not it. That's not what Paul means. Paul's saying, hey, measure according to the faith that you believe. if you believe in God's grace, that's the standard by which you measure yourself. And of course, that's the standard which, like we read from that verse from Ephesians, means we've got nothing to boast in. That the only thing it measures really is God's grace. So, back to the original point. How is this grace going to influence how we live? And the first thing is this. I think there's three things. It's that grace humbles. The instruction in that Paul gives here is don't think you're better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves. We shouldn't be ego-inflated people, thinking we're Superman. We shouldn't be proud. We need to engage in this honest evaluation of ourselves. You know, we might think we're super, but then grace comes along with a great big pin and goes, pop. And we discover what we're really like. See, grace humbles us. Because we realise none of it's to do with us, it's all to do with how gracious and wonderful God is. Can I say too, there's a difference between humbling and humiliating. Sometimes we get confused between the two. Grace humbles. What it does not do is humiliate. Humiliation leaves us angry and embarrassed. You've probably experienced that, haven't you? Someone makes an offhanded comment and which just leaves you devastated, humiliated. Humbling never does that. Because what humbling does is it leaves you in awe of the thing which is humbling you. When you see a child, for example, during worship, dancing around in circles like this, like Hattie was doing last week, and you think, oh, I wish I could do that. That's quite humbling. But it doesn't humiliate you. Because what it does, it leaves you in awe of that expression of worship. And you just think, wow, that's really beautiful and wonderful. So humbling and humiliation is not the same thing. Humbling leaves you in awe. And in awe of grace. The second thing Paul talks about is how grace connects us. Don't look too closely. You might remember this kind of thing from school. This was the best picture I could find. We had one in the biology lab, let's call it, but really it's just a room, isn't it, in your school, with all the different parts of the body, and you can take them out, and then you can, you know, when you're 12, the challenge is to put them in again in the right order, otherwise you get left over with a liver left over or something. But Paul's saying that, like a human body, the church, our church, has many parts to it. And those many parts make up one whole. You're not all skin. You're not just muscle. You're not just bone even, are you? There's so many different organs and parts of your body, and they all work in particular ways and so on and so forth. Many parts, but one whole. And it's faith in God's grace that makes us part of that body. We are just one part amongst many. We're not even all here today, and there's what? I don't know, 20 people here. So I'm one in 20 here. I'm just one part among many. And you can look at the human body and you can think, well, that part's more important than that part. Well, on one level it is. You know, if you took your heart out, you wouldn't live much longer. But on another part level, you know, what is the point of a heart without the rest of the body? There isn't any. It's all interdependent. So however highly you think about yourself within that, you know, you are interdependent. And you are important within the body, because without you, certain things could not happen. I remember hearing once, and I don't know if Helen would agree with this being the specialist, but that if you lose your little toe, you have to learn to walk again, because your little toe provides great balance in walking. It's only that big. Well, yours might be smaller. But even a little toe is really, really important. And Christ's body then would be less without you. So grace connects. The last thing grace does is it shapes. Paul has listed all these gifts, all these abilities, all these passions maybe, all these concerns that God has put upon us and put in our hearts. And they are gifts of grace. But grace isn't just about what we do, it's also about how we do it. It's about doing those kinds of things that Paul lists graciously or gracefully, depending on how you want to look at it. For example, giving. Giving generously, not begrudgingly. You might get fed up with the fact that you're such a good giver. And that defeats the point of grace or something. You're not a bit funny example. Or leading, you know. Paul says, lead seriously. Take the responsibility seriously. Don't be half-hearted. Don't be careless in your leading. And Paul says about showing kindness. Do it gladly, with a smile on your face. You know? Don't be grumpy or angry about the fact that this is what God's called you to do. That's how grace should influence what we do. A couple of final points. I think there is a risk in church life that what we do is we forget God's grace. We forget about grace. The two big risks, one is the one that Paul directly addresses, is thinking of ourselves as better than we really are. But I think the opposite is also true, that sometimes we run the risk of thinking ourselves as less than we truly are. Let's start with the first. You do come across people within churches who do still have that superiority complex. They do think that they're better than others. They think that other people should emulate them. They can be overbearing. We talk sometimes about discipling people, mentoring people, which means where you meet up with them and you open the Bible with them and you pray with them and you talk with them, you find out what's going on in their lives, you share your life and so on and so on. But if the goal of that discipleship thing is to make you like me, then that's wrong. That's not discipleship. Discipleship is about helping someone else be like Jesus, according to the way that God has made them. It comes out of love and not pride, that kind of thing. So in this picture, there's a risk of being the Bigfoot person, if you forget God's grace. But there's also a risk of being the little person. That we have an inferiority complex. One of the great statements in the Bible is this idea that we are not what we were. As believers, we are not what we were. We have received grace. That in the eyes of God, we are different to what we were. But sometimes we go around thinking that we are still sinners to be squashed, rather than saints to be saved. The Bible never calls Christians sinners. It calls them saints. It says we're God's children that he cherishes. Do you see what I mean? And sometimes what we do is we focus on the fact that we're sinners. We talk about being sinners all the time. Hopefully, according to the Bible, that's what we were. That's not what we are anymore. We're now in God's grace. We're now his children. We're now his saints. If you go around thinking as if you are still a sinner, then you're not letting God's grace into your life. You're keeping all that Jesus has done for you at arm's length and saying, well, I'm not worthy to receive that really. That's a terrible lie. God loves you, he has made you his child, and you're a saint, not a sinner now. Let's finish on a more positive note. Paul wants these folk in Rome to be lifted by God's grace. To lift their eyes off themselves, some who are clearly, otherwise I don't think he'd be saying it, thinking they're better than they really are, and saying, hey, remember God's grace. Remember, God has done all this for you in Jesus. Not because you were good enough, not because you made him, not because you deserved it, but because God loved you before you even had any clue about it. That God has put us together in his grace to be one body together, and every part here is special. That God has given us different gifts and abilities. You are different to me. There's no point me standing up and saying, well, my gifts are the best. It's no good. God has made you to be who you are. You know the things that you are gifted in and good at. And God wants you to use them in accordance with his grace. To show off his grace. Again, Ephesians. I love Ephesians. It talks about displaying God's grace to the world. You know? Like we're his trophy cabinet. And he just wants us to show it off. So let's be a church where grace lifts us. It lifts our eyes to God and all that he's done for us. Let's pray together. Father, we want to thank you today.